podcast is named 31 Thoughts, the podcast. You do 31 thoughts every week at sportsnet.ca. 31 teams in the NHL. Trade deadline on the horizon next Monday. Let's do 31 thoughts on 31 teams in advance of trade deadline. I have the easy job here. I read teams' names. Okay. Elliot gets to flex his brains. Starting in the Metro, we'll start with the Carolina Hurricanes. Go.
Will buy as long as it doesn't mortgage their future.
Columbus Blue Jackets.
Buyer. Now, here's the problem, Jeff. I've heard what they're willing to pay. Teams consider to be way too low.
New Jersey Devils.
I think a smart buyer. They're a stealth team for me on
this
Evander
is found
Kane.
Money for them this yeah. year, isn't it?
Stealth Evander Kane team.
All right. New York Islanders.
I think they're a buyer, but, you know, Calgary's out of the playoffs. They got Calgary's first-round pick. Don't think they want to move that. I think they're a buyer, though.
Goalie?
I just don't know how they want to go.
Goalie buyer?
I've heard the goalie market is, like, nowhere.
You look at the Mrazek deal. Isn't the goalie market light?
Yeah, very light. You know what? The Islanders have always struck me as a team that believed if their defense was good, their goalie would be good. So I think that they will go D before they go goal. But I could be totally wrong.
New York Rangers.
Sell, sell, sell.
Everybody?
Just about everybody. You know, somebody's got to pay big money for McDonough. But I think that they are definitely a seller. I'm not a genius for saying that. Everybody knows that.
For McDonough, Boston, Tampa, should I add teams?
I've heard there's teams out west.
Philadelphia Flyers.
Careful buyer.
Ron Hextall said he owed it to the team to make the move for the goaltender. How much more does he owe it to this team that's in a playoff spot right now?
I think that's about it. Can I tell a quick story? Can
of course,
I beat
yep.
this? I wrote this in the blog. Back when I covered baseball, 1997, Chicago White Sox, 3.5 games out of first place behind a powerful Cleveland team in the American League Central. They traded 2/5 of their starting rotation, Danny Darwin and Wilson Alvarez, and they traded their closer, Roberto Hernandez, as part of one big deal to the San Francisco Giants for 6 minor leaguers. Players were bananas. They came to Toronto, and not long after that, I interviewed Robin Ventura, a longtime third baseman. And he said to me, I thought the whole deal of this sport was to try and win. And they were furious. And they blew their season right after that. They went into a tailspin right after that. And I remember talking to people about it, and that's where I learned the way players think. They think that what you do on the deadline should be about what they've earned. And the White Sox felt they earned help, not to be dismantled. The Flyers, and I understand what Hextall is thinking. He's saying they've earned help. Not ridiculous help, but help. And that's what he's going to do.
Pittsburgh Penguins, what would help them?
You know, I think they're in on Grabner. Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he reported that he'd heard that the Rangers might not help them. I don't believe that's true. Like, if Daniel Sprong is on the table, I don't see why someone wouldn't be interested. Grabner's a perfect fit for them, and I still think they're looking for a center.
Is this where I insert the obligatory Matt Cullen joke?
I don't think it's a joke. There's a reason they made Matt Hunwick available last week.
Washington Capitals.
I think a careful buyer. I think the Michael Kempney deal is what they're looking at, like depth pieces. You know, one of the things that's interesting to me, Jeff, is how comfortable John Carlson and the Capitals seem to be about going without a contract until now.
What's the old saying? Don't let someone see free agency. Don't let someone look over the other side of the hill.
The key word you used there was old. I think the way Stamkos went to free agency has changed some teams' opinion on this, that if you really believe a cornerstone player wants to stay, you can wait. I think the other thing, too, is the Capitals see how they do in the playoffs to see if they have to get rid of someone else to make more room for Carlson.
Okay, so that's the Metro. Let's go to the Atlantic right now. The Boston Bruins just picked up Nick Holden from the New York Rangers. Any other moves expected there?
I think the biggest question with Boston is how big they want to go. How big do they want to go?
Expectation at the beginning of the season probably
Nowhere.
Was not this.
No.
But now that they've found this, you want to talk about owing a team something?
Well, do you think you can win?
I think they have as legitimate a chance as anybody else at the elite level in the Eastern Conference to get there. I never want to predict and win the Stanley Cup because that's a 7-game series and that's too much. But I think an expectation to get to the conference final is legit.
I think that they are weighing that. How big do we want to go? McDonough.
And they don't want to let go of their prospects.
They
that's
don't.
Another
Not
thing.
The ones who are there, especially.
Buffalo Sabres.
Seller. I'll say this. Guys who were at that game on Saturday against the Kings said that Jason Botterill was as angry as any GM they've seen this year. He's asked a lot. an awful lot.
This is his first trade deadline.
Yep.
How much of a signature does he want to put on this?
I don't think you should ever think like that. I think you should solely look at it like, you know, we're here to do what's right. But he set a big price on Kane and others, and I just don't know if he's going
to
get it.
Sam Pollock used to always say, don't give up on a young player until you're 100% sure. If you're 95% sure, don't make the deal. If you're 99% sure, don't make the deal. Having said all that, let me throw a saber
name at you. Who's ever 100% sure?
No one is, really. We're all throwing darts at these things, and that includes GMs. But with that in mind...
Sam Pollock's smart, but I'm not buying that one.
Let me throw this name out at you then. Reinhardt.
Well, I had reported, I think a week ago, that Philadelphia and Buffalo were talking, and I could never pin it down, but I think Buffalo was looking at their D in the AHL, like Moran and Ranheim,
mm-hmm.
or Sanheim, excuse me. Like, that's the kind of guy I could see Ron Hextall looking at. I think the biggest problem is that they've got Casey Mittelstadt probably coming maybe as soon as next year.
Yep.
I think they want O'Reilly there, and you're going to have Eichel there. Are you penning Casey Mittelstadt in as your third line center, or do you still need Reinhardt?
And the other question becomes, how close is Alex Nylander?
That's
maybe
one
of the big wild cards in all of it.
Tough year so far.
Had a tough slog since he got drafted. Detroit Red Wings.
I think they're sellers. I think Glenn Denning to Toronto was very real. I heard they...
Now, is that just because of the Babcock Association?
Yeah,
he's always loved Luke Glenn Denning.
He called him, he's a prick. Like, he likes that line. And I like that line. I think it's very funny. I think that with Glenn Denning, one of the problems is the Leafs are at 49 contracts. They can't do it for a draft pick. I believe Soshnikov was in there. I could see Levo being in there. And I still think they're a couple rounds apart in the draft pick. But it wouldn't surprise me if that one gets done.
We'll get to the Maple Leafs here in a couple of seconds. Florida Panthers, who do have some games in hand and could end up making some noise here.
For me, the Panthers are almost like dollar in, dollar out. Like, you have to be wary of the money there. But I think they're really good. I like their team a lot, despite what happened in Winnipeg the other day. I think that Bjugstad could go. I think there's some interest there. He's having trouble finding a fit there. I've mentioned I think they're a stealth team for Pacioretty. I think Petrovic could go. I think Florida's got a couple things on the move, but I think they always take the long-term view.
Did you hear that Matthew Perreault for Bjugstad was once upon a time a thing under a different regime?
I think that was
Florida
last year.
Yes.
You know, the thing about Matthew Perreault, he's an interesting guy. He's really talented, but he's always hurt. And I think that's the only thing that teams look at with him and say you can't always depend on him because he gets hurt a lot.
Speaking of hurt, no Shea Weber, some Hugh and Kreider shut him down for the season. Where are you at on the Habs?
Well, I mean, they're obviously sellers. Pacioretty.
Plekanec.
You know, I've heard that Claude Julien wants to keep Plekanec because they're not very deep at center, which actually would make some sense to me. I would also think that with them, I'm wondering about Gallagher. To me, that's a tough deal to make. Like, your most valuable guy to trade might be Gallagher.
Mm-hmm. That's the, and you listen to Guy Lafleur once upon a time, so that's the guy who should be the captain of the Montreal Canadiens. That's an emotional spark plug.
And I don't know if I would do it now. I was, you know, I had a lot of time for the whole, like, I really hate sometimes talking about, like, Subban and what can be perceived in a negative way because it's such a gong show. But I thought what Gallagher did after that game Montreal needed. And this is not an anti-Subban thing. It's not. It's just that they have lied down and taken it all year, and finally he stood up and said something. He stood up for his team, really. And, you know, guys just to say to me that Montreal could get a lot for Gallagher, but where that team is now, I'm not sure I'd want to deal that guy.
You see, I'm a big Subban guy, as you know, but I think that to that point, I think Montreal needs to close, not just the team, but the city. If that team's going to lurch forward, has to close the door on that.
It'll never happen.
It has to be done.
It'll never happen. Because, and you know what, Jeff, I wrote it last week. It's like a bad breakup. Nobody's over it yet. Subban's not over it yet. Montreal's not over it yet. The city, the province, the players, the organization, that's never going to end. It never will.
And if Nashville wins the Cup, where's he bringing it?
Well, he's going to take it right to Montreal.
Ottawa Senators.
Seller, big time. Question is how much? You know, there's all this talk. Does Carlson go or does he not go? You're nuts to think that Ottawa isn't at least considering the possibility. There could be a lot of guys. There could be Smith. There could be Broussard.
Hang on, pause on Carlson, because you guys talked about this again on headlines. I'm talking about on Saturday. You know, the common wisdom is you will get more if you hand Carlson off to a team for not one but two playoff races and playoff opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So if your decision is this guy's going to go eventually, why not do it now?
Well, I think it's a trade you have to win. Like, the fan situation there in Ottawa, it's tenuous. They're unhappy. You know, they're not thrilled now that Eugene Melnyk is going to take over as president and CEO, which to me is probably the right move because he's a hands-on guy anyway. You might as well just have him do it. I look at it as if you're going to trade him, you have to get something back that excites your fans. You can't just pair him with Bobby Ryan and some crazy salary dump.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you get Mikhail Sergachev back, you know, that's exciting. But if you don't, you know, it's like, how are you going to sell tickets?
Vegas. I could see Vegas. And we'll get to Vegas here on this. But if I'm Vegas, I'm looking at this and saying, you want to talk about found money. This is found money, but we're in for a penny.
So
let's go in for a pound. And we have picks and we have prospects. Pick someone off the roster and let's bring in Erik Karlsson.
Well, you got to believe you can sign him. There's no question about that. Let me give you another one. This one somebody brought up to me. What if Colorado said, we'll give you everything back that you traded for us?
So you give up Shane Bowers and the first round pick.
And, you know, do you want to give up Girard? I don't know.
If you could guarantee yourself. Personally, I don't do it.
Okay, but it was just something that was appealing to me. You know, Vegas makes a lot of sense. Like, I heard Vegas was in on Hoffman, and someone said to me that that makes no sense for them. But Karlsson might. Like, you know what? Like, I got to tell you, if I'm Vegas and I'm blowing my money on anyone, yeah, Karlsson would definitely be high on that list. But I might wait to see what Tavares does.
Tampa Bay Lightning.
Buyer, the question is how big? And
we talked last week about all the prospects they have. And
you know,
there
it's
are
funny.
Plenty. There's not going to be room for all of them.
I got a call from someone about that. He says, I see what you've been writing about Tampa. And he said that you're right to a degree, but Yzerman's not going to deal point. So they've got a lot of prospects, but how many of them are really high end? Who is Yzerman going to trade that's really going to be high end?
I think you've got someone on the roster right away.
Who's that?
We talked about Tyler Johnson.
Okay, but he doesn't want to make his team worse, okay? But, yeah, Tyler Johnson is a good player. Okay, so there you go. But if you're going for prospects, which high-end prospect is he going to deal you?
Let's see. Will you be picking from Cirelli, from Stevens, from Cal Foote, if someone wants a young defenseman?
Yeah.
There's an option there.
They've got some Russians, too. Howden. But that's the thing. Like, the highest guy is Point, and you're not getting him. The second highest guy is Sergachev. Are you getting him?
Depends who you offer.
Okay. And then after that, what are you getting?
You're not getting your going to make the team right away.
Yes.
Potential superstars. But you're going to get an NHL player.
But Dick, you know, I'll give you another name I could see for Tampa, if he's willing to waive his no-trade clause. Alex Edler. But he's got to be willing to waive.
Chris Tanev.
Tanev's now out another month. I don't know if you're doing that.
We'll get to Vancouver in a sec.
Yeah.
Okay, here we are. Maple Leafs. We'll finish up the Eastern Conference and then move to the West. Toronto Maple Leafs.
You know what? I have no idea what to expect from these guys. They asked about Tanev. They're obviously in on Glenn Denning. I could see the Maple Leafs making a lateral move to get something else. Like, what if they trade someone to get something and then use that something to get someone else?
Interesting. Let's get to the Western Conference. Here's a name we never thought we'd attach Seller to, but here we go. Chicago Blackhawks in the Central.
You know, I'd heard Columbus had asked them about Anisimov. I think Chicago's position is centers are hard to find. You know, they've dealt one UFA, Michael Kempney. They have more. They have Ruda. They have Wingles. They have Bomos, had a pretty good year. Interesting one will be Patrick Sharp. Does he finish the year in Chicago, or does he, you know, Calgary and Boston were teams that looked at him in the past. Are they going to look at him again?
Want to revisit the side conversation, or is that done?
No, you know what? I think anything's in the air there.
Colorado Avalanche.
Smart buyer.
A much better team this year than perhaps even they thought they'd be.
You know, the tough one is Erik Johnsson looks like a bad injury. I think some teams have asked them about Blake Como, but I could see them keeping him just to stay in the run. Like Philly, I think their players have earned like a chance to stay. I think they're a smart buyer if they get something small but inexpensive, or something that helps them long term, they could do it.
Any chance they deal Bernier? No. Kind of a hot market for him.
Like, yeah,
if you're looking for a return,
what are you getting? Like with Mrazek, you got a conditional third and a conditional fourth. Like, I'd probably rather keep him and say to our guys, "You've earned the right for him to stay."
Dallas Stars. Jim Knoll's under some pressure here, isn't he?
He is. I saw his quotes the other day, like, we're looking quite, I don't know. I still think Nash is a possibility there, but, you know, they don't want to trade Jason Dickinson. I can see that being the guy everybody's asking for. So I think they're a smart buyer.
Minnesota Wild.
They don't have a lot of room to do things. You know, they just made a 2-for-1 minor league deal, which opened up a contract spot for them. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they're trying to do is sign one of their NCAA players who can become a free agent on August the 15th. So that's something they want to do. You know, they don't have a lot of cap room. I'll tell you this. I've mentioned Charlie Coyle. I think they've had interest in him. But Charlie Coyle, like, again, he's a center. He hasn't scored the way you want him to score. But I think
is he a center or is he a winger?
Well,
is always a question I have about Charlie Coyle.
I mean, the fact is he's a bruiser, and you kind of like those in the playoffs.
Nashville Predators. We keep talking about Rick Nash.
They're a buyer.
Rick Nash, the obvious one.
Yeah, but I think there's others. You know, my question is, what are they willing to give up? They just give up a lot to get Turris. They don't want to deal Fabro. They don't want to deal Tolvanen. What are they giving up? What's next?
St. Louis Blues. That's who's next.
I think they're a buyer.
Potential kingmakers here?
Yes, but I've heard like they're really not interested in trading Kyrou or Thomas.
Those are the two high.
Yes.
High. Klim Kostin, throw him into the mix as well. Those are the two.
You know, Kostin's name I haven't heard. I have heard they really don't want to do Kyrou. Now, the other thing now, too, is Doug Armstrong has a contract extension. He's not needing to do anything to save his job. I think he'd like to do something, but I don't think he wants to do that.
If you want to bring something in and you want to keep Kyrou, you want to keep Robert Thomas, understandable, is Robbie Fabry then the target?
I think Ottawa has talked to them about Fabry before. I've heard Ottawa's looked after at some of his medical stuff. I do believe that he's been a guy that teams have talked about.
Winnipeg Jets.
You know, Jeff, I've heard one of the biggest issues is all the no trades. I have to tell you, I don't get this. If I was a rental or I had 1 year left, I would go to Winnipeg. You know, they're talented. In this league, I mean, God, the league is so tight. You never know who's going to be successful from 1 year to another. I mean, Tampa missed the playoffs last year, could win the Stanley Cup this year. But I would bet on Winnipeg. They're going to score. They're talented. Mm-hmm. And as you know, if you succeed in Canada as a free agent, your stock goes through the roof.
It's a good point about teams turning things around, as someone pointed out to me on Twitter a couple of days ago. Look at the teams, top three in the lottery last year, New Jersey, Philadelphia, and Dallas. What do they all have in common? They are in the playoffs.
Also, I think they are trying to go for it.
With good reason. In the Pacific, we'll start with the Anaheim Ducks. Where's the quack?
I think Bob Murray's kind of in the middle. Like, he's the kind of guy who it wouldn't surprise me if he was looking at McDonough. Like, I don't know that. But Bob Murray is a guy who's got his hand in, like, every potential big deal there is. He's got young players. But he's also a guy who says, no matter how good my team is, if there's a good player out there, I'm in. And, you know,
regardless of position.
Regardless of position.
So if there is a, let's say, center, for example, and you look down the middle, whether it's Getzlaff and Henrique and Ryan Kett, they would still make that deal.
I think he would if it was a good player. Like, he hates rentals. Like, as he pointed out last week, you know, when he traded for Patrick Eves, it was a guy he was eyeing towards signing, which he did. Unfortunately, Reeves had the illness and can't play. But that, to me, is the kind of deal that he will make. He will make a deal that, regardless of where he is this year, he thinks himself better for the long term.
We know that Arizona are sellers, so I won't bother asking that question. The only question
I
do
think
ask,
Jalmerson, though. I don't think Jalmerson.
I was going to say Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Max Domi.
Domi, yes. It's a tough one, though. Like, he's still a talented young guy, and I think they're asking a lot, and teams are like, look at his production. But I don't think Ekman-Larsson goes. I think they take their shot to sign him this summer.
Calgary Flames.
I think they're a buyer. You know, I don't think they like the way their team is kind of lurching along. They have a win, and they have an ugly loss. Mm-hmm. And I think they're looking for scoring, a scoring winger, and I wouldn't be surprised if – you know, I got to tell you, like, Tree Living, he's another guy who's got his hands in everything. And if someone was to pull off a surprise trade where you look at it and you go, wow, wouldn't surprise me if it was him.
Wouldn't surprise us to see Edmonton rather active come Monday. The only question is whom?
I mean, obviously the UFAs are there. I don't see Draisaitl doing it. First of all, I think it's a bad idea. And secondly, I just don't see it. You know, the one that I really wonder about is what are they going to do on their blue line? Like, this whole thing still, like, I don't understand why Klefbom is playing.
Because he's hurt?
I mean,
so why is he playing?
Like, just shut him down. Like, you know, it's enough. I don't know, like, could they do Larson? I mean, it's a tough deal for them to do.
Oof.
But I think they've got something cooking with their D. I don't know if it happens now or later, but they've got something cooking, I think. Got
to blaze through these last four. Okay. Los Angeles Kings.
Buyer. I could see them looking at Detroit's wingers kind of thing.
San Jose Sharks.
Buyer looking for scoring.
Could they be a stealth team for Tavares should he become available
for
July 1st?
Oh, for sure. Make a pitch. Don't forget, you know, first of all, they got $20 million cap room, number one. And number two, don't forget they made a pitch for Stamkos.
Once upon a time, Doug Wilson made large overtures to Columbus when Rick Nash was available.
Yep.
This is a lot coming off of the World Cup when he played so well with Joe Thornton. But could that be an option? San Jose for Rick Nash?
Absolutely, I think it could. He doesn't like rentals. And he doesn't want to tamper with his $20 million in cap room for the summer.
You mentioned Edler, mentioned Tanev as well. Where are you at with Vancouver?
I think a seller. I think also they're looking for forwards with term. Like guys like Bjugstad, I could see Vancouver having interest in that kind of a player.
Funny, once upon a time when Luongo was interested, they asked for Bjugstad from Florida, and the return was, no thanks, we're keeping Bjugstad. Thank you very much. They've wanted Bjugstad there for a while.
Yeah.
Even under a different regime.
Yes,
too.
That's true, and they did a lot of deals together.
By the way, thoughts on Erik Branson re-upping quick before
you know,
we get to Vegas?
I think they looked at it like we're not getting what we want trade-wise, so we're going to take the chance of building him into a better player.
And we'll conclude with the insanely good Vegas Golden Knights. How did we end up here, Elliot?
It's phenomenal. It's, you know, the NHL league that's looking for great stories.
Huh.
It got a great story. I look at them, and I see a team that will probably add, but not at the expense of their future.
Would they move James Neal?
I don't think so.
Would they move one of the three first-rounders from last year?
I doubt it.
Suzuki, Glass, Brännström.
No, why would you?
If you're fishing for someone like Carlson.
You can't do that unless you're getting some assurance he's signing, I guess. I mean, it would be the all-time stunner of a move. I just don't see it.
This is Vegas showbiz.
I could see the owner being that way.
Yeah.
If you told me that the owner was telling George McPhee to do that, I would totally believe it. 1,000%. But, you know, he'll be careful. I mean, the other thing, too, is they're going to get a crossover team, right?
Yes.
So, you know, they'll probably – I mean, they might get Calgary. It's possible. But if they were just in their division, that division doesn't scare you right now, does it?
No, they may end up getting Minnesota.
Or they might get a Calgary or something like that. But I don't know. I think they're as good as anybody. But I could see George McPhee saying, no, we got to build. And I can see the owner saying, go for it.
I can see the owner saying, we don't want this story to stop. And I can see the fans saying the same thing. For some, that might be an entire podcast. For us, that was just the opening. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, trade deadline edition, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
Hi, it's Nick Foligno, and you're listening to 31 Thoughts with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick. I can't believe these guys have that many thoughts, but enjoy.
Well, actually, Elliot has 31 thoughts. I have a couple every week, as my wife likes to remind me, and then after that, I got nothing. That's why I just, as my wife likes to say, Jeff, you really don't do anything at work, do you? And I said, well, what do you mean, hon? She says, well, you just kind of talk about things that other people do. And she's right. I don't build anything. I don't make anything. I don't create anything. I just say things, Elliot, like, ooh, that looked like a bad pass. And, I think that was probably offside.
You know, it is true. Like, my buddies say, like, what do you do? Like, must be nice to do what you do.
Yeah, or as my buddies, the hockey team, say, what's it like to have to wear a ski mask when you get paid? Stealing money every 2 weeks. Welcome to the 31 Thoughts podcast. I hope you enjoyed the opening, running down all the teams and what we can maybe expect come Monday, come trade deadline time. We wanted to turn this podcast into sort of a quasi-preview of the trade deadline, maybe talk about some trades that didn't happen, some trades that have happened, the genesis of trades, what general managers go through when making trades, how things start at one place and end up at another. We'd like to let you know we reached out to a lot of general managers over the past 7 days. current general managers, previous general managers, some have said, we're cool to come on and talk about things, and you'll hear that in a couple of moments, and others have politely declined. And I can understand why. I mean, you're talking about making moves that didn't come to fruition, and they probably don't want those names out, nor do they want their names attached to it. And Elliot, I can understand and respect that.
Absolutely. And you know what? People are good about it. It's interesting. Like, I think when a lot of guys retire or get out, they're happy to tell their stories. For the most part.
You know what the white whale is for me?
What's that?
For trades that never happened.
What?
And I don't think he will ever. I've asked a couple of different times when I've been on the air with him, and that's Bill Torrey. And I've asked a couple of times, which were the players that he was offered from the Montreal Canadiens? I understand there were five pieces.
Yeah.
In exchange for the first overall pick that turned into Denny Potvin. Because Montreal wanted Potvin bad. Everybody did. I mean, this guy, you look at him playing junior hockey, this guy's a man playing with boys. You know he's going to step in the NHL and be a star. He's never said publicly who the five are. I don't know who they are, Elliot. Nor have I ever been able to talk to anyone. As you pick up your iPhone right now thinking, I can make two texts right now, Merrick, and find out
who
they are.
No, I bet you I couldn't. If he's not going to tell you, he's not going to tell me. The only similar one I have to that is there is an executive I know who was offered a GM job, a fairly prominent GM job at one time, and he told me the story. He said, but you can't use that story. And recently I went to him and said, can I ever use that story? Will you ever talk about it? And he looked at me and goes, when I'm gone, you can write it.
Okay, so you're sitting on that one.
You know, it's like, I don't want to have to root for that. And he just laughs, but he says he's not comfortable talking about it.
We'll talk about a lot of trades that almost happened that didn't end up happening. One of the big ones is Vincent LeCavalier, who was almost dealt a couple of different times from Tampa, once to Toronto and once to Montreal. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about being in tough situations and relationships with media when you're a general manager. Scott Housen is going to drop by and talk about that. Lawrence Gilman, who I think is one of the more underrated and perhaps under-recognized people around hockey and has been for a while, will talk to us about his time in Vancouver and coming close to moving Alex Burrows.
Yeah, and
once upon a time.
And I think that was really tough for those guys, and you'll hear it for Lawrence when he talks about it. It was a choice. Would he take a contract extension or would he get traded?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, like, when Alex Burrows got suspended for the 10 games for his play on Taylor Hall, and he deserved the suspension. He made a mistake. He deserved to be punished. But if you run him down, Vancouver will come to his defense because this was a guy who beat the odds, and he made it. And there's a lot to be admired about that.
Speaking of beat the odds, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for guys, A, never drafted,
yes.
B, started their career in the East Coast Hockey League.
Or roller hockey.
And worked their way up.
Yes.
And Alex Burrows' case, ball hockey, one of the best ball hockey players Canada's ever produced.
Yes.
And worked his way up to the NHL. I remember because I was doing AHL games then when he was playing with the Manitoba Moose. And here's this interesting story about the guy never drafted ECHL, and here he is in the American Hockey League. And said to myself, you know what? That's going to be a nice career for Alex Burrows. He's going to end up having made it as far as the American Hockey League without ever being drafted. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah.
Boy, was I wrong.
And now he's going to play over a decade, right? And he's made a good chunk of change, take care of his family. You could tell, even when Lawrence talks to us about it now, that it was a very, very difficult day for them.
Okay, so you're going to hear from Lawrence Gilman. You'll hear from Scott Housen as well. He's been involved in some tough situations, some sweated out situations. You'll hear from him about those in a couple of moments as well. Brian Lawton, former GM of Tampa, will drop by about Vinny LeCavalier. But first, you know, a lot of trade deadline. You're going to hear this come Monday. By the way, quick plug, Sportsnet's coverage begins at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific.
Too early.
Every year, and we say the same thing at the end of it. We'll never do that again, and then we do the same thing again.
Somebody buys it, and we're doing it.
The same thing the following season. But you're going to hear trade pending, trade official trade call. Now, the trade call itself, the origins of it was the Eric Lindros deal. Because Eric Lindros, as we all know, ended up getting traded to two teams. And it took an arbitrator to decide which team actually consummated the deal. Which team does he go to? Between, for those who don't know, between the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Rangers. So the NHL came up with this idea of the trade call where a trade doesn't get consummated until both general managers call in this line in this number and give their side of the deal. If the other side calls in and it's an exact match, we have a trade. Otherwise, we don't. So the trade call origins have their genesis in the Eric Lindros deal because the NHL did not want to go through that again. Thank you very much.
I can't understand why.
I can't imagine why they wouldn't want to go through that again. The funny side of that was once that – this is so NHL, boys. Once they came up with the trade line, the trade call, what would happen is every now and then when an NHL general manager might find himself a little bit overserved, let's just say, he would call the trade deadline and do impressions of Ron Caron of the St. Louis Blues proposing outlandish trades until, as I understand it, the NHL had to call and say, okay, let's put a leash on that puppy. Let's end that practice right now. Elliot, someone that was involved in not just one but two Eric Lindros deals, one in the NHL and one in the OHL, is Sherry Bassin. And fans of junior hockey will know him as, you know, one of the architects of, you know, various, you know, world junior squads, the Oshawa Generals, a Memorial Cup team with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. And he found himself as the point man mm-hmm. in a lot of ways for the Quebec Nordiques when they made the Eric Lindros deal that saw number 88 go from Quebec to Philadelphia. But Philly and the Rangers, they weren't the only teams that were involved in this one.
The Quebec Nordiques are very proud to select as first pick overall in the 1991 NHL annual draft the General d'Oshawa, the Legion de l'Ontario, from the Oshawa Generals of the OHL, Eric Lindros.
Congratulations. Take a deep breath and tell me it's finally reality. How does it feel?
This feels great. It's quite an honor. You know, there's so many great players in the country and in the country south of us. And to be selected first overall, I'm just proud.
Congratulations. Good luck.
Well, hockey experts are already calling Eric Lindros the next great one. But the 18-year-old's reputation is anything but great in Quebec. He says he won't play for the Quebec Nordiques, the NHL team that drafted him this summer. That's got a lot of Quebec hockey fans pretty angry.
We had a format from junior that when they called me in, the Nordiques called me in, and I said, it's interesting, they flew me in and with Mr. Robu, and he said to me, I remember a meeting in Grapefruit looking at me and said, what happens if I tell you that I don't want to trade Lindros? And I said, well, why'd you fly me in? But what happens if I told you you could get draft choices, players, and money? He looked at me and he said, well, what are we wasting our time? Let's go to work. The real issue here is that therefore we had to take a look at who had all three, who had players that we wanted in return, who had draft choices, and who had money, because that was a big part of it. And Pittsburgh had players and draft choices but didn't have the money at the time. Toronto had money and draft choices, but not enough players that we were interested at the time. And you can go on and on and on. So what did we have to do here? Pretty simple. We had to break down every team, farm team, draft choices, every single team, even though they keep some of that information. But we had to go in depth about players to be developed and so forth. Who would have all three? And if I remember correctly, the teams that we thought from our research were Vancouver, LA, Chicago, Philadelphia, New York Rangers, and the Montreal Canadiens. Then once we believed that they had, who was in fact going to move the players that we thought had to be necessary? Because we knew that we were giving up a superstar that could lead that team to the promised land. And then we started talking generally, and that was kind of my responsibility. Paget was busy coaching, and he trusted me. And we started talking to teams. But there were generalizations, real generalizations. And then when we found out that Forsberg would be part of the deal with Philadelphia, we started really breaking that team down seriously. Because there's certain key players, Jeff, that have to be involved if you're going to make the deal. We had to really win with Montreal, which Patrick Roy had to be part of it. But we weren't sure we were going to trade him down the road. So it would have had to knock our socks off. And one of the people involved definitely had to be Patrick Roy. As much as we thought that they had all three, once we got close with other teams, it had to be an awesome deal. Like, we would have had to definitely win the deal. when in fact, most time when you trade, you want both sides to win. So we make the trade for the players, $15 million U.S. dollars and two first-round picks. And the deal was finally made, and it was decided that was the deal. And so when they bring it back, and I'm looking at it, I'm looking at the paperwork, and we discover that Philadelphia doesn't have two first-round picks 2 years in a row. So I said, that's not part of the deal. The deal is, and I remember the emotion, and I have deep respect for Bobby Clark. So then what happened was, after it was all looked at, they didn't. So it was decided that they could protect five players, and then we could pick another player. And Chris Simon had played for me in junior and even all the rumors. And in those days, if you remember, you needed people like that when you had a highly skilled team. So Chris Simon was the player that we wanted, even though we made it common throughout the league there were other players we were thinking about. But in fact, and they protected their five players, left Chris Simon off, and we got him as an extra player. And I was convinced that he had come around and could be a real player, and for a number of years he played.
Could you imagine Eric Lindros as a member of the Montreal Canadiens?
I'm even more interested in the price.
And Sherry lays that out quite succinctly and says, well, Toronto had two of the three, so they were out. Pittsburgh had two of the three, so they were out. So teams like LA and Vancouver, Chicago, Philadelphia, the Rangers, and Montreal had all three. And the price tag, as we all saw, not just prospects, not just players, but $15 million, which really perked the ears of Obu. Thank you very much, who realized, yeah, I'm going to sell this franchise. With Lindros, it's an extra $50 million going somewhere. And even if I don't have Lindros, I could cash in to $15 million here. But Lindros, as a member of the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, for Waugh, right?
As Sherry mentions, Patrick Waugh was, that was the one player they had to have back. The thinking was, you know, Patrick Waugh grew up as a Nordiques fan. Now, Patrick Waugh was a fan of the Quebec Nordiques. That was his team.
Do you think, because, you know, the Waugh deal was such a killer for Montreal. Yeah. If he was in Quebec, but they had Lindros, do you think Montreal fans would have been satisfied with that?
You see, I wonder, too, because let's not forget, it wasn't just Quebec that wasn't thrilled with him not putting on the Nordiques jersey with the fleur-de-lis on it. But it was the entire province of Quebec in a lot of ways. To the point where the following season at the draft in Montreal, Todd Warner, okay, he goes fourth overall. Todd tells the story well. And, you know, he's there. Donnie Meehan congratulates him. And he walks down and he goes up on the stage and they hand him the Nordiques jersey. And he puts it on. This is in Montreal. And the place erupts. And he goes, and they go crazy. And Warner can't figure out why they're so excited about their rival team just drafting Todd Warner fourth overall, until someone points out at him back on the floor, oh, don't you remember last year? Eric Lindros wouldn't put this jersey on. You know, an Anglophone wouldn't put on that jersey. Here's another Anglophone drafted by the Quebec Nordiques, and you're putting on the jersey. That's not just Nordiques fans that are cheering for you. That's the entirety of Quebec.
Yes.
So I do wonder if that would have been a mitigating factor, whether it was Eric versus Quebec City or Eric versus the province of Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer to that one, Elliot. What do you think? They've wanted a center for a long,
yes,
long time, and that's.
But the thing is, I'm more looking at it the other way. If you're Montreal and you see Patrick Waugh have success in Quebec City, are you okay with that because you have Eric Lindros? That's the way I look at it.
I don't know the answer to that one. I can see both ways. Oh, but man, Eric was so dominant.
He was.
And as a peak performer.
Do you know, still win the Stanley Cup in 1993?
Who would their goaltender have been? Don't know. Oh, ifs and buts. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one.
Canadians fans listening to this, if you could go back in a time machine, knowing everything you know,
yeah,
and learned that you were getting Eric Lindros for Patrick Waugh,
would you have taken
history the way it unfolded, or would you change it?
Let me ask you another
question. The butterfly effect. Starring fans of the Montreal Canadiens.
Let me throw another butterfly effect question to people then, because as I've been told by someone in Montreal with the organization at that time, before the Colorado deal was done, the original trade for Patrick Waugh was with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Right.
It was Belfour 1-for-1.
Mm-hmm.
How would Montreal Canadiens fans feel about that deal versus what they got from Colorado.
Well, Belfour was great.
Sure was, and it's a great goalie for a great goalie.
And he was never bothered by Toronto either.
Nope.
Like, when he played there, he played well. He didn't seem out of it. Like, in terms of, I can't handle the pressure and the media and everything. I think he's a guy who would have handled Montreal because he would have said, I'm not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
You guys say what you want. I'm just going to stop pucks.
There have been a few, I mean, certainly the great ones are like this, that can silence the noise around them.
He could.
That could just, and listen, Belfour was not without his quirks, as we all know.
No. I mean, but you know what?
But you know what? I'm fine with that for someone. Listen,
I'm
shocked.
People will put up with a lot of things.
100%. And as Don King once said, where there's money, there's understanding. And when there's greatness, we can understand a little bit of crazy every now and then. So people will tolerate it from the goalie, the starting goalie, not so much the backup goalie. They'll tolerate it from the first line center, not so much the fourth line center. So I get that, and I understand it as well. Trading players in Canada is interesting. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, hockey fans, I know I'm painting with a very wide brush here, Elliot. I'm painting with a roller, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian hockey fans really become attached, and we talked earlier about Alex Burrows, really become attached to their players.
Yes.
Specifically ones that, as you mentioned, battled to get there, are loved, walk the line of dirty versus intense.
Yep.
And perhaps nobody did that better than Alex Burrows.
People love an underdog.
They do love an underdog, and your underdog story generally goes like this. Undrafted, didn't quit. Played in the ECHL, didn't quit. Played in the American Hockey League, played some games, didn't play some games, didn't quit. Made it to the NHL and became a fan favorite, a cult hero, and as we're about to find out, was almost moved by the Vancouver Canucks before the prime of his career really even started. Here's Lawrence Gilman with that story.
Fitting tribute to one of the real star players of this Vancouver Canucks, this generation of Vancouver Canucks.
We knew it would be a warm reception. It was about as warm as you could get, a lengthy standing ovation. And I said off the top, I mean, the number of big goals that Alex Burrows scored in this building for this team, probably as many, if not more, than anyone in history. Significant goals, goals that... Well, twice probably saved the coach's job, for one thing.
First trade deadline that I was in Vancouver, which was in 2009, we had Alex Burrows on an expiring contract, and he was having a pretty successful season. And we were trying to negotiate an extension with him at the time, but we didn't want to lose the asset for nothing. And at the same time, we were operating on two tracks. We were attempting to negotiate a contract extension, and we were also potentially looking to trade him. And the morning before the deadline, we had a deal come up where we could have traded Alex for a roster player, a forward who was a third liner, and a first round draft choice in the upcoming draft. And Mike Gillis, who was running our team at the time, felt this was too significant a deal to pass up. If we weren't going to be able to get Alex signed, we were going to make this trade. And we essentially told Alex that the contract that we were putting on the table was either ready to be signed or he was going to be dealt. And to Alex's credit, he made the decision that he wanted to remain in Vancouver Canuck and signed a 4-year, $8 million deal and went on to score over 100 goals for our team in the ensuing 4 years, one of which was a lockout short year in 2012-13. I was sick to my stomach because I thought we were going to trade him. I felt that the asset management aspect of it was significant, and I felt, you know, this was going to be one of those deals that you have to do because it's in the best interest of your organization. And when Alex's agent called us to inform us that he was going to take the 4-year contract, I was incredibly relieved. For me, actually, our trade deadline in 2011 was stressful because we knew we had a chance. Like, we had a good team, we were leading the league, and it was important for us to add those final pieces. And we were fortunate at that deadline to add two players. The very day of the deadline, we added Chris Higgins and Max Lapierre, who ended up playing significant roles for us as we went to the Stanley Cup final. Chris Higgins, we consummated that deal with the Florida Panthers with literally minutes to go for the deadline. It came up, the phone call was made with 15 minutes to the deadline. What are you doing with this guy? And Mike Santos from the Florida Panthers said to me, well, we're looking at maybe another trade. We offered a third-round pick. He called back within minutes of the deadline, and we had a deal. And it was a frantic, you know, there was a frantic rush of activity to notify the National Hockey League to let them know that we had a deal in time so that they could register it and put us in the queue for the trade call.
Interesting conversation with Lawrence Gilman. You know, one of the things that I've always been fascinated with, Elliot, is the greatest team to never win the Stanley Cup. And sometimes I come to that Ottawa Senators squad in the mid-2000s that were, you know, 2017, the 2016 team, I thought was exceptional as well. When you look at this era, you know, the salary cap era, 2005 on, the best team to never win the Stanley Cup. We'll put Washington in there.
Yeah, Vancouver.
I was going to say, where would you put the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, they won two President's Trophies. Don't forget, they were up 2-0 in that series.
Sure were.
And Boston went back home and was like, okay, guys, we've got to make this a rodeo if we're going to win this. And they did. And I will tell you this. I have tried to reach Aaron Rome a few times over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And he won't talk. And I'll never forget hearing what his reaction was when he got suspended for 5 games in that series for that hit on Nathan Horton.
Yeah.
I was told he was devastated like no other player was ever devastated to receive a suspension. And you remember, Dan Hamhuis was hurt, yeah. And then they lost Rome to the suspension. And there are people in Vancouver who still believe that that cost them the Stanley Cup. And
had a little bit of goalie-itis, too.
The other one there was that, don't forget, they were probably going to start Corey Schneider in Game 6, but Luongo shut out Boston at home in Game 5, and you can't do that. But that was a great team. And, you know, Aaron Rome was a really nice, decent guy. I think he's coaching in the Western Hockey League now. And I have reached out to him to talk, and he just doesn't want anything to do with it. And I respect it. I don't have any negative will towards him. But, you know, I know Vancouver, there's a lot of hard feelings over that. You know, I got to tell you, too, if Nashville doesn't win the next couple of years, they could go down as that team. Tampa, you know, is another team that could go down as that team if they don't win. Like, those are really good teams. You know, San Jose, we forget because they get a bit lost out there.
Washington West.
San Jose was another team that was always good.
One of the things about being a general manager, even an assistant general manager in the NHL, around this time, and you see it on July 1st, you see it at the draft, there are those specific days that are the pressure cooker, where you go into the fryer and you leave trade deadline and you're sizzled from, you know, what you've been through and the decisions that you have to make. You know, you want to make it as informed a decision as you can. But as many people, whether it's in sports or philosophy or science or whatever, will point out, you can never have enough data. You can never have enough data to make a decision. If you just make it on your gut, not enough data. If you make it based on spreadsheets and evaluations and scouting conversations, still, it's not enough data to make. You can do data all your life before you make a deal. And I think it paralyzes in some ways a lot of general managers, ones that have the reputation of being ones that are hesitant to pull the trigger. So I can understand where the nervousness comes from and the self-doubt comes from, because you can never have enough information.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is you're taking a chance. You know, I think the answer to a lot of questions, this is why I hate doing predictions. My real answer is always, I don't know. You know, I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't know if this is going to be a good deal for us. I don't know if this team's going to win or this guy's going to win this trophy. I just don't know.
The pundit's safest answer, I don't know.
Yeah, the pundit's quickest route to unemployment is, I don't know.
Well, you know what the thing is? Like, one of my favorite Twitter accounts out there is Old Takes Exposed.
Oh, like, I got to follow that.
Oh, my God, Jeff. Like, it's so funny. They go back through things that people wrote that were, like, total hot takery that turned out to be completely
wrong. Oh, you know
wrong.
What? I'm on there for a John Chyka tweet about GM of the Year that I keep getting roasted on.
We all have those. Like, we all have takes that go completely wrong. But it depends on how you phrase it. Like, do you go into complete hot take mode, like spitting fire? And then you're totally wrong. Like, that old takes exposed Twitter account.
I laugh
at some of that, but I also say, like, there by the grace of God go I.
I could very well be on there as well. And, you know, underlying all of it is, at the end of the day, like, what's going to happen on February 26th is, you know, it's going to be 31 general managers in really tough situations. Mm-hmm. And trying to evaluate what type of intel they have and do they have enough to pull the trigger on a deal that they think is going to help their team. Let's talk to Scott Housen about being a general manager in tough situations.
There's a lot more media focus on it, so you have to deal with all of that, and it can be very distracting for your team and the players on your team as their names get mentioned. So you have to, since I can remember, it's always been a lot of pressure. You're on high alert. You're working on a deadline, and sometimes things go right to the end, which can be very, very stressful. There's very few players, in my opinion, that are untouchable, and conversations go on all the time about certain players. And you can never say you're never going to trade a player or that you've never talked about a player, because teams can phone and ask about players all the time. And then when that gets public, you know, there's a big difference between a general manager actually offering a player up or being asked about a player. But the fact is, they've talked about a player, and when that gets public, that can be very disturbing, and it can be dangerous to the team, dangerous to the team chemistry, and can hurt what you're trying to accomplish with your team. I remember when I was assistant GM with Kevin Lowe in Edmonton, I remember there was a report came out about Todd Marchant and he was going to get traded. And it was just so far-fetched to us. We hadn't even really talked about Todd. Todd was a really important part of our team. And I can't remember if we actually had to talk to Todd or not, but it wasn't even the realm of possibility. So it's upsetting when you hear and read that type of thing. As the assistant general manager with the Oilers, we traded Ryan Smith, which was a very unpopular move, very tough to do, and it came right down to the deadline. We were trying to negotiate a contract extension with Ryan. We weren't very far off. We had this offer on the table from the Islanders that we were going to accept if we couldn't get it done, and really it came down to 15 minutes before the deadline. We had Ryan and Donnie Meehan and Ryan's wife on the phone, and we thought we were close, but we couldn't get the deal done. So we hung up the phone, and we traded Ryan with 5 minutes left, probably in the deadline, which you can imagine sent shockwaves through Edmonton. Very popular player. Very glad he came back and retired as an Oiler. And that was a really, really tough day. I remember that. And I think that night was the Mark Messier retirement ceremony. We had a game that night, and it just put a damper on that, what should have been a real celebration. The next one that I remember was my first year as a general manager in Columbus. We had Adam Foote in the last year of his contract, and we had made the decision in the morning to keep Adam. And I brought Adam up to my office and talked to him and tell him that. This was probably with 3 or 4 hours to go before the deadline. And I could see by our conversation that Adam wasn't really thrilled with our decision to keep him. He wanted to go to a place where he thought he had a better chance. And maybe he had heard the rumors that we were talking to Colorado, which was his, obviously his former team. He's excited about going back there. But I had turned off the tap on Colorado. I said, we're keeping him. So after my conversation with Adam, I convened with our president and our owner, and I thought, you know, this doesn't seem right to me. Called back Colorado and traded him. And that was hard. That caused some ill feelings amongst our fan base with Adam, amongst Adam with us. And it wasn't a very good feeling, but it was the right thing to do. We ended up getting a first-round pick for him. And the last one was Rick Nash. When Rick had asked to be traded, I think about January of that year, we started canvassing teams, and it became public again, and it got really ugly. And nobody knew the whole story, that it was really Rick was asking for a trade, and it wasn't shocking. So there was a lot of pressure. And I did have some preliminary conversations with the Rangers the day before, I think the morning of, but really couldn't get close on anything. I wasn't ready to move yet. As it turned out, we did end up trading him to the Rangers, and for a package that was probably fairly similar, not identical, but fairly similar to what we got in July, 4 months later. But I just wasn't ready to move. I hadn't canvassed the market. I didn't know the players well enough we were getting back. And so we just said no. And I remember that was an awful feeling because, again, that created a lot of ill will in our market and ill will towards Rick at times from our fan base, which probably wasn't deserved, and just didn't leave you with a very good feeling. You know, I can think of other deadlines, Elliot, where we knew that the year we made the first playoff appearance for the Blue Jackets, we got a deal done in the morning. I think we were the first deal done. We traded for Antoine Vermette and traded Pascal Leclerc and a second round pick to Ottawa. And, you know, it happened, I think, at 9 o'clock in the morning. It just so happened that Brian Murray and myself were ready to do the deal. We talked about it, and we talked to each other in the morning and said, let's do it. And then, you know, it wasn't very stressful after that because I don't think we were really in on very much serious. But you've got to be ready, and it always seems it comes down more often than not to the last minute, and you're sitting there scrambling. You're trying to get the trade call. You can't get the trade call done by 3 o'clock Eastern. But as long as you get the particulars of the deal in by 3 o'clock, then it has a chance to survive. And it just seems that you're always right up against it, and you've got a team of people around you that are helping you. And it's very stressful. You've got to be on high alert, and it's always usually somewhat of a relief once 301 hits.
You know, Jeff, there's one thing I wanted to talk to you about that interview. And Scott and I have a good relationship, but there's a level of distance that stays between us in the sense that he has told me before that there are elements of my job that drive him crazy. And he has actually used the word dangerous at times to describe some of the work I do. And he talked about it in that Todd Marchand story about how it got out that they were thinking of trading him when he said it was totally not true. And he does believe that, especially now in the days of social media, a bad rumor can really destroy teams. And that's why I wanted to give him a chance to say that, because I know he feels very strongly about that. Like, for example, when Rick Nash asked for a trade from Columbus, he wouldn't talk to me for like a couple of weeks.
Scott Housen.
Yeah, I would text him. I would try to call him. Nothing. Like nothing.
And he told you that he was
steamed
at you about it?
Well, no, it wasn't. It's just that he didn't want to lie to me. Because he knew what I was going to ask him, and he wasn't going to tell me. Because at that Nash deal, if I remember the history correctly, they didn't admit that Nash had asked for a trade until after the deadline was over and they hadn't traded him. So he was like, I'm not going to tell you. And he also said, I'm not going to confirm for you that Rick Nash has asked for a trade. Like, why would I do that? So I've always been interested in that, like the role we play. And I'm not trying to like say that we're really that influential, because I don't think we are. But I do think it plays a factor in all the craziness about this. And the social media era has made it worse.
I think there are some writers in some situations that have had a lot of influence. You know, it was, you know, widely speculated, and I've heard this from a number of different people that were there, that Red Fisher essentially shut down a trade between Montreal and Toronto. That would have seen Shane Corson and Claude Lemieux head to Toronto in exchange for Wendell Clark and Gary Lehman. And that was one of those, I just heard about this, and if you make this deal, I will run you out of town in my paper.
You know,
think things like that
may
have happened previous. Do you not think that they happened?
Yes, I think that has happened before. I know of one team where somebody who was interviewing for the GM job met off the record with a couple of local columnists to see if that person could get along with the columnists.
Yeah.
I told the owner I thought that was craziness. I said, you cannot, as much as I think it's great that we're powerful as media, quote unquote, I don't think you can run a team like that. And I said, I don't think you will run a successful team if it's like that. But I'll tell you one story that's happened to me is once when I was doing the hot stove, I got a call from a general manager on a Saturday afternoon, and he said, okay, I'm going to use you today. And I go, all right, how this week? And he laughed and he said, we're thinking about something, and we want to know which way the wind is blowing. I said, okay. Now I said, like, I won't do this unless you tell me that, unless I believe that this is a true rumor.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yes, it's true. We are considering it. But we, you know, the owner wanted to know how would it be perceived. So we floated it, and it never happened. And I think I know why it never happened. That has happened to me once in my career.
Let me ask you this. I remember one scenario, I remember sitting with someone who is a significant insider in our industry.
Was it Doug McLean?
I am not going to say. You've played this game with me before, and you can go on as many fishing trips. I am not going to say who it is, although you probably know who it is. I remember sitting in an office with him once as a text came in from someone who was looking for a specific executive job in a very specific hockey market, who essentially said, hey, it's too quiet about me out there. Can you start chatting me up as a candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Can you start, you know, getting my name attached to this, you know, more than it is already? My name has kind of died down here. Where are you at on that? Because I'm sure you must get offers like, hey, can you heat me up here a little bit? It's kind of quiet around me.
I do. I have told guys that I think it can be damaging to them now. Mm-hmm. That I think there are some teams that have not hired people because their names got out. I know specifically of one person who cost himself a GM job.
Wow.
Because he leaked his name. My perspective on that is, first of all, I have to find out if you're a legitimate candidate. Because if you're not a legitimate candidate and I put it out there, you're going to look like an idiot. And so will I.
Right.
So I say, let me find out if you're a legitimate candidate. And secondly, I say to them, like, I will tell you that it could cost you. Now, I will say this. I have had situations where I found out guys were candidates and I've been begged not to report it.
Mm-hmm.
And my reaction to that is, if I know it, it's getting out. So handle it how you think. Like I've said, I'll give you time to inform people that it's getting out and I called you. But if I know it, it's getting out.
You know, one of the biggest trades that actually didn't happen and the information got out about it was involving Vincent LeCavalier. Not once, but twice. You know, where once there was a disagreement between the then general manager, Rick Dudley, and Vincent LeCavalier. He was almost dealt to the Toronto Maple Leafs. He was the owner that stepped in at that point to end it. It would have been LeCavalier in exchange for, I used to know this when I worked with Waters at Leafs Lunch so many years ago. We talked about it openly. I'm not telling secrets out of school here. This would have been, I think it was Cabrera, Antropov, either Brad Boys, and a first. There might have been one other piece involved. But nonetheless, the idea was that they wanted a second-line center to play behind Matt Sundin in Toronto. That didn't happen. And then the other one occurred when, you know, listen, Montreal was looking for a first-line center, French-Canadian preferable, as mm-hmm. always. And Vincent LeCavalier's name got out there. And you can remember that All-Star game when they were chanting his name at the airport.
We were interviewing him on the bench, and he was like, why do I have to answer these questions?
So how much did you think Vinny LeCavalier was going to become a Montreal Canadian?
I thought it was happening.
I think everybody did.
I thought it was. There was so much momentum there, Jeff.
Made so much sense for everybody involved.
Yes. I don't think he wanted it.
You don't think he wanted to go to Montreal?
No.
In the Danny Briere sense of this is going to be too much
yes,
pressure?
Yes, I think he liked it in Tampa. I think he liked being – I never got the sense talking to him that he wanted it.
That would have been a deal between Bob Gainey of the Montreal Canadiens and Brian Lawton, then general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Let's hear more about this.
As Vinny LeCavalier, welcome back here to Amalie Arena tonight. And let's join public address announcer Paul Porter.
Well, it was very close. It wasn't an easy decision, obviously. Vinny LeCavalier was not only a great player at the time, but he was a great person. Just philosophically with where we were trying to take the club at that time, you know, we had a little guy by the name of Steven Stamkos, high draft picks, eventually Victor Hedman, and just felt that the future of the Lightning would be in younger players, and that a guy like Vinny LeCavalier, still incredibly valuable, would return an enormous amount of potential in young players and prospects. But we wanted that last piece in a goaltender. That was something that was very important to us, and we even talked about moving our goaltender at that point, who wasn't old but wasn't young, in Mike Smith. So, you know, we were looking at the potential of a package of LeCavalier and Smith for some of the young top prospects at that time for the Montreal Canadiens. Well, we were definitely looking for a young D, and we talked about, obviously, P.K. Subban and Ryan McDonough at that point were two guys of interest to us. Max Pacioretty was certainly a guy that we had interest in. You know, Carey Price, quite frankly, was a guy that we had interest in. And at the end of the day, you know, this was really going to be a package that would serve the Lightning very well long term, but in the short term, would have been incredibly difficult to do. It was not my call in the end to do it, but it was absolutely my desire that I wanted to at that point. And I don't say that lightly, because to this day, you know, I'm still very good friends and have great thoughts about Vinny LeCavalier. It just wasn't a match for the club at that point. I really thought that we would get it done. I think the Canadians thought we would get it done. In the end, one of the owners of the Tampa Bay Lightning would not approve it. I needed to have approval from both. Oren Kulas had given me approval, but I did not have approval from Lindberry at the time. And that's why the trade never moved forward. There's always consideration for the fans. You know, they're important. They drive your business. But for me, you know, my main purpose as a general manager was to try to improve the team long term. When I took the job, I took it on that basis, and everything that I did down there was based around that. And, you know, we moved out a lot of very good people, very good older players. Quite frankly, when Steve Yzerman got there, you know, we had done a lot of the heavy lifting and really set things up. It takes quite a bit of time to do something like that. We stuck with it through thick or thin. Those were tough economic times in Florida, but we were very unwavering on our staff in terms of the direction we were going in. And that just never changed. That's the way I approached it. And it was difficult, very difficult, but you got to do what you got to do.
Some really interesting thoughts there from Brian Lawton, former GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Want to thank him for stopping by. I want to thank Scott Housen for stopping by the podcast this week. Lawrence Gilman as well, ex of the Vancouver Canucks. And, of course, Sherwood Basson, the legend. We'll be right back with your favorite, hashtag Ask31. The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold-flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade. Okay, Elliot, that was a lot to chew on. I hope everyone appreciated hearing from general managers / assistant general managers / league personnel about some trades that didn't happen and the genesis and architecture of how trades come together. We'll finish the podcast, as we do each and every week, here with some hashtag Ask31. Your chance to get in on the fun. The first one comes to us from JJ Hanke. Hope I'm pronouncing it right. H-A-N-K-E. JJ Hank? I'm so bad at names.
I think of South Park when I hear Hanky.
I know. Who is the best general manager candidate right now who hasn't held the title of general manager? My choice would be Paul Fenton. That from JJ hashtag Ask31. Paul Fenton, for those who don't know, is the assistant GM with the Preds.
You got to think at some point in time he's going to be their GM, right?
One would assume, but
yes.
Does David Boyle show any signs of slowing down?
They win a Stanley Cup.
Oh, go out
at
on top.
The parade. See you later. I'm out. Like George Costanza after doing the perfect joke. I'm out. See ya.
It's a good way to do it.
Fenton would be up there. No question about that. They've had a long run of success.
Julian Breezeboa, Tampa.
Yeah. You know, there's another one.
Kyle Dubas, Toronto.
Mike Fiuta, LA. You know, because you always worry about, like, am I going to insult somebody if I don't mention their name?
Sure.
The one thing I've been told about Jeff, about answering this question, is there's guys out there that we don't know. And the other thing, too, is I think the league's preference now is they want fewer scouts and more managers.
In what sense?
they just feel that if you're going to run an organization now, like a multi-million dollar organization, where owners are much more involved than they ever have been, they don't feel that scouting is the most important thing. Like Jim Neal had an interesting quote to me earlier this year where he talked about how being a GM is less about hockey and more about managing people.
Upwards or downwards?
Both. Especially up, but especially up. And the real best candidates now are the people who know how to do that. How do you manage?
And that doesn't necessarily mean those that have, quote unquote, played the game.
Right. But the thing is, like, Yzerman, he set it up in Tampa so that he answers to the owner only. Okay? So he's got a good setup there. But not everybody has that. And also, he's got an owner who's willing to sit back and say, okay, you do the job. Not a lot of people have that.
So you're saying then that the league would encourage more titles like director of hockey operations.
Yep.
More people above the office of the general manager.
Yes. Can you run a business? Can you manage a business? And you know what? Just because you're a former player doesn't mean you can't do that. But I think it means that you probably have to spend more time learning how to do that.
From Andy Larson, Ask 31. Who gets credit in Boston? Is Cassidy really this good? Did Don Sweeney draft way better than people think? Some combination? Thanks. From Andy.
I think Boston's a tough team to work for. It's a demanding owner. Charlie Jacobs, demanding guy too. I mean, Jeremy Jacobs admitted that he left Game 7 against Toronto in 2000 and what was it, 13?
Thought they were going to lose.
Yeah, and so did Charlie. Charlie Jacobs left that game too. And, you know, that's a tough team to work for. And I think that Don Sweeney has managed it very well. I think Cassidy deserves a lot of credit. You know, sometimes teams just need a fresh change. Like, this is the other thing I've learned about this, is that when Mike Sullivan got fired, people told me he'd never be a head coach in the NHL again. When Bruce Cassidy got fired in Washington,
I remember that. Yeah.
People said he'd never be a coach in the NHL again. Just because you get fired doesn't mean you're not capable. It means, what did you learn about why you got fired? And I think Bruce Cassidy's a guy who learned an awful lot. They didn't have all the answers.
You know what? There's another person in that organization that I feel the same way about with Bruce Cassidy. And it's tough when you go through the ringer that is Toronto, and it's high profile and it's high pressure. And when you want to talk about who's, you know, helped construct this Boston Bruins team, certainly Sweeney is the general manager. What about John Ferguson, who's been there to attract, whether it's just something simple as, you know, when he was in San Jose, he, you know, noticed Sean Corrali and brought him to the Boston Bruins. And other things that he does, whether it's draft, whether it's player acquisition, and you want to talk about, oh, he'll never work again, I think there's plenty of room for John Ferguson in the NHL.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'll tell you something about Boston, too. You know who deserves the most credit? Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara. Because they set a tone for that organization that is, we're here to do the work, and if you don't fit in, you're not going to last here. They're pros. They seek no attention. All they do is take great care of themselves and show up to play year after year after year.
Yeah.
You know, Bergeron could become the second player ever to win the Hart and the Selke in the same year.
Hello, Fedorov.
And Chara goes down maybe as the best free agent signing in the history of the NHL. And why? Because they did their jobs.
And looks like he's not winding down either.
No. I talk about learning how to manage. Peter Chiarelli was very frustrated by all the different hands in the cookie jar in Boston. I think Don Sweeney has learned how to manage with all of that. And I think that Bergeron and Chara set a tone that all the players follow.
Nate Britton, this is a fun one. I don't even know if you have an answer for this one. I do, but for weird reasons, perhaps. Who's your guys' favorite officials and why? Refs and or linesmen, past or present? I love watching Jay Scherers break up a fight.
You know, Milan Lucic has already been suspended here in Los Angeles. You got to be careful in this situation. Watch what happens as he throws the hands out. That's Jay Scherers, the lineman. Linesman, excuse me, that gets it right in the mouth.
When Jay Scherers gets the clamp on someone, fight's over.
I will go off the board for this one.
Okay.
I mean, right now, everybody's favorite is Wes McCauley.
Of course, Wes is fun.
And you know what? I'll tell you this. I think the NHL and the NBA miss this, the color of the referees. There used to be leagues where you could have those conversations and both leagues clamped down on them. I think that's a terrible mistake. But when I covered the NBA, I know Emil likes it whenever I say that line. When I covered the NBA, there was a referee named Steve Javy. the players told me he was the one referee they never talked back to because he had a huge temper and he was tough. He wouldn't back down. He once threw the Portland Trailblazers mascot out of a game.
The mascot?
Yes. Because he didn't like what the mascot did. I don't care if he taunted him or taunted a player, and he threw the mascot out of the game. And also, you know how tough this guy was, Jeff?
Seriously.
Do you remember years ago when the NBA referees all got busted by the IRS for switching first-class flights and not declaring it on their incomes? There was one referee who went to court and won. Steve Javy.
Really?
Yes.
Oh! Nowitzki! Knock it off! Knock it off! Well, don't throw the elbow. I'll take care. I'm all right, Nick. I said, I don't know whether you've thrown it at him on purpose or not, but I'm giving you a break on it and saying you didn't. Next time, I got to get you on it.
So the players are like, do not screw around with Steve Javy. So I always liked watching him because he carried himself like he could be on the court with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And he's like, screw off, Jordan. I'm tougher than you.
One of the guys from around the NHL, you mentioned Wes McCauley, and everyone loves the call. Who was it? Someone is going to fact check us on Twitter on this one, and I'm asking for it because I can't remember who the official was. Did you catch it last week? The official, on calling it too many men on the ice penalty, said, penalty to whomever, too many men on the ice, six gentlemen and a goaler.
Quick whistle right there, but I think there might be too many men on the ice for the Nashville Predators. Blues have a good rush right there with Shen, but what a hit by Jay Bouwmeester near the bench of the Nashville Predators.
Bench for Nashville for too many guys on the ice. There's six gentlemen and the goaler.
Yeah. The polite referee. The most polite referee. Someone's going to grab us on Twitter and say who that was.
When I was a kid, I went to the Seneca hockey camp, and Vern Buffy ran it, so I will say Vern Buffy.
First autograph I ever got.
Vern Buffy?
With Warren Park, Vern Buffy spoke to our hockey association and signed my Warren Park program from the season. Vern Buffy was the first NHL person I ever met.
There you go.
I still have that. So any chance to get Vern Buffy's name on this podcast, I am all for it. So thank you for that. From Jukebox Hero 89, spelled gyro. That's a nice touch for your Halifax phones.
Greek.
Who is the Caps GM next season, and does Trotz come back?
I think it all depends on how they do in the playoffs. It's interesting to me that, you know, they didn't allow Reardon to interview with anyone last year, and they went out of their way to tell people that Reardon didn't interview with anyone. So I think the playoffs tell the story. But I'll tell you this. I think what happened last year, the way they lost to Pittsburgh, those sores are not closed.
Losing to Pittsburgh is death.
But the way they lost, 3-1, Crosby hurt. Those sores have not healed.
Finish up Ask 31 with Matthew Dell, at Real Matthew Dell. Being around NHL executives a lot, what characteristics do you think it takes to become one and a successful one? Ask 31.
I think you have to have a thick skin, and I think you have to be willing to say you have to appreciate your fans, but you can't let them run your decision-making. You have to be confident in yourself without being a gigantic egomaniacal blowhard. You have to have a plan, and you have to stick to that plan. Like Mike Tyson has a great line, like everybody has a plan until the first time you get punched in the face, right? So your plan is going to be thrown off in ways that you can't control. It's like life. But I think that you have to believe in what you're doing. You have to stick to what you're doing, and you have to be willing to explain yourself under criticism. And you have to be calm. Like you have to project calmness. I think those are the most important characteristics.
As we conclude the podcast, I want to remind you our draft coverage at Sportsnet begins 8 o'clock Eastern on Monday, February 26th. That is 5 o'clock Pacific. Elliot will be at the Trade Breakers desk. I'll be in a room with Doug McClain, Ryan Whitney, Colby Armstrong, and Glenn Healy. Wish me luck.
Oh, my God.
Wish me luck, Elliot. That room is, okay, nothing's happening. Throw it upstairs and let these guys talk.
That's not even a misdemeanor. That's like a that's a felony. Like, what felony did you
commit? Dude, I've done it 3 years in a row. What can I say? I'm a glutton for it. I love it. By the way, mentioned on last week's podcast, we'd be talking about players that we in the NHL right now that we could see as coaches. This podcast, which is focused around trades and trade deadline, kind of scuttled that idea. But we will get to it next week, we promise. So, again, reminder, Our Sportsnet coverage of the NHL trade deadline beginning 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific, February 26. Please join us. Quick thought on it. Normally we see tweak deadline more than trade deadline. Do you think it'll be capital T trades, lower T trades, or capital slash lower T tweak deadline this time around, Elliot?
You know, that's like on the weekend when Amber was talking about which father was on after hours, and I couldn't understand where he was going. I have no idea what all the choices were there. I think we get one bomb.
Mm-hmm.
One bomb that just throws us in a stunning way.
All right. We will keep our fingers crossed for at least one bomb lobbied from the 31 general managers around the NHL. All right. So on that, we'll wrap things up. Hope you enjoyed the trade deadline edition of the 31 Thoughts podcast. We're back next week, 7 days. Thanks so much for the downloads. Thanks for lending us your ears. Thanks for taking us to the gym, in the road, wherever you end up with this podcast. We thank you, and we'll talk to you again in 7 days. Enjoy NHL trade deadline on Sportsnet.